Welcome to Finish Well Radio, where changing the world starts with changing the home, with your host, Meredith Curtis.
Hi, I'm Meredith Curtis. Welcome to Finish Well Radio.
Hi, I'm Laura Nolet. Welcome to Finish Well Radio.
We love the beach.
So we have been friends for a long time. We live in Florida, so the beach weather is very extended, although neither one of us would be caught dead going to the beach when it's cold, which to us is anything below 75 degrees. However, we have logged many, many hours at the beach as homeschool moms. And we've homeschooled, Laura has four, I have five. We've homeschooled them all the way through. So you can imagine how many times we've gone to the beach. And I know sometimes in my family, I would say, okay, finish your math and we'll go to the beach. And then when I met Laura and she loved the beach too, I knew it. We were born to homeschool together.
It may be shameful to admit this, and Meredith, I hope you still love me, but I do go to the beach when it's cold outside.
Oh.
I grew up in Virginia, Virginia Beach to be exact, and so the beach there isn't warm all year round, and for me, the salt air and the waves is the most relaxing thing for me, so I go there sometimes just to calm down and relax. And when my kids were little, they didn't like to go in the water, and so it was actually the safest place to take them to play because they would stay close to me the whole time. And so I would go year-round when I needed a break.
That is a total benefit of the beach. And I know all of you homeschool moms listening, you think, relax, calm down. I'm always calm. I'm always relaxed. I'm always at peace. But Laura and I aren't always at peace, and so we need places to go that soothe our spirit, and the beach is a great one. So we love the beach because you can learn so much at the beach. You can learn about marine biology. You can learn about oceanography. You can learn about architecture. You can learn about earth science. You can learn about history. You can learn about geography. You can learn about human anatomy and health and safety. You can learn about food and nutrition. You can learn about art. You can learn about collecting. And you can assist the Lord in building godly character in your children's lives. And best of all, of course, there is what your kids love, and that's you can have physical education at the beach. So there is so much of learning that happens. And if you're like us, we believe in a lifestyle of learning. And that means wherever we go, whatever we do, our ears are always open. Our eyes are always open. We're always thinking, wow, what has God done here? And what's happened here in the past? And it's very, very exciting. So I'm going to start with marine biology. And of course, because marine means sea, biology means the study of life. And so, of course, when you go to the beach, you can study marine life.
So when we go to the beach, we love bird watching. It's exciting to watch a flock of pelicans go overhead, as long as they're not dropping anything on your head. Or your car. We went one time and they wiped out all of our cars in the parking lot while we were enjoying the surf. It was terrible. But anyway, a little car wash later, we were all happy again.
Yes, we were.
We love to watch the big birds, the little birds. They tease me and tell me I'm a sandpiper because I have tiny little short legs. I have to move really fast to keep up with all these tall people I'm friends with. We love bird watching. There's so many different kinds of birds. And whatever beach is near you, there's going to be different birds than what we have, but just as wide of a variety. So that's always fun. And it's always exciting to look out for dolphins. One trick we've taught our kids is you also have to look out for sharks here in Florida because we do have them. So whenever we see a fin sticking up, we call it a lesson and we count how many fins are sticking up, because if you see one fin out of the water, it's a dolphin. But if you see two fins out of the water, it's a shark. And you might want to get out of the water.
One of the things that we have in Florida are manatees, and we're really close to one of the most popular places to see manatees, and that's Blue Springs Park. But out by the beach, there's a little spot. We go to New Smyrna Beach a lot, which is south of Daytona Beach, but there's this little spot where the seawater meets the freshwater, and in that water, so close to the beach, I mean really like yards from the beach, are these manatees, and they're swimming in these little inlets. And so we have gone and we have seen the manatees up close, and of course we go to Blue Springs too, but we are able to see them at the beach. When the tide comes in, and there's little tide pools, and we'll talk about that later, you can see all kinds of fish. And if the water is really clear, now in Florida, if you go down to Key West, the water's super, super, super clear. You can see every single fish. But there are times that you can see clearly all the fish, but you definitely feel them swimming around your feet. And so we enjoy exploring. We enjoy finding new things. And, of course, shells, animals live in shells. One thing we did on our vacation, Laura's oldest son is married to my oldest daughter. That is so cool, and we love that, because now we're not just good friends, but we're family. So we were on this vacation at the beach at night, and Rusty, our oldest grandson, and Cooper was still a baby, but Rusty's dad, Zach, who's Laura's son, had flashlights, and if you shine your flashlight at night, the little crabs will just go crazy running around, and they're pretty big, and they go, you know how crabs walk. Blah, blah, blah. Well, you can't see what I'm doing, but you can just imagine. Anyway, my grandson was fascinated by that, but of course so were the rest of us, because God made such a wide variety of marine life that we can see.
Well, you know what kind of animals that live in the sea and frequent beaches and the waters near them. So we're going to move on and talk about oceanography. So when you're planning a trip to the beach, it is very important to know when it's going to be low tide and when it's going to be high tide, because sometimes your favorite spot for sitting in the sun is underwater during
exactly.
high tide.
Exactly.
So pull out the charts, look them up on the internet, or check with your local TV stations. They usually keep track of all those things that you can pull up that information. And talk to your family. Use that as an opportunity to talk to them about the tides and how there are two high tides every day and two low tides every day. I recently watched a movie and it made me laugh, because the Army man was saying, won't the tide be high again in 3 hours? And the Navy man said, it's a good thing I'm in the Navy.
That's cute. Your kids get a little older and they learn about rip tides and currents and high tide and low tide. See, we've experienced all those things because we've had our kids occasionally, at least one of us a piece, get caught in a rip tide. And when you get caught in a rip tide, you have to swim horizontal to the shoreline. And, you know, so you learn how to do that. Well, then later when they're learning what is a riptide and how does it work, you can say, hey, remember when your brother was caught in a riptide and he couldn't get out of it by swimming toward the shore? He had to swim horizontal until he got out of it. And the other thing is the whole idea of tides. Like, again, the same thing. You're learning about the moon and how the moon affects the tides. When you can say to your child, hey, remember when we're at the beach and we have all our stuff there and then the water just keeps getting closer and closer and closer and we have to move our stuff back and back and back, and that's because it's high tide. And so you're giving children experience that they're actually learning by experience, and then later when they learn the science behind it, they have something to hang their hat on. They have a peg back in time when they remember, hey, I remember having to move our stuff and the water kept coming forward and forward and forward. And that, of course, is high tide.
When I was a little girl, I had the privilege of living for a couple of years in Monterey, California, which is so gorgeous. It's so beautiful. And when we lived in Monterey, California, we never went to the beach. It was too cold there to go to the beach. Now, I've pulled out my map since then, and I've looked at where Monterey, California is. I've even looked at, like, where Los Angeles is. Monterey's a little farther north than that, but not as far north as San Francisco. When I've looked at the map, I look across my map of the United States, and I've done a little geography with my kids, so I understand how there's that curve of the latitude, and so you have to look at what actually is equal. But when I looked at the East Coast, that was just as far north of the equator as Monterey was, people there love to go to the beach. It got warm, the water was wonderful for swimming in, but not like it was in California. Now, we ask, why is that? I mean, the temperature is dependent upon how far away from the equator you are, isn't it? But then we learned about currents. And the currents in the Atlantic Ocean and the Pacific Ocean go in giant circles. And what we learned was the current on the Atlantic coast of the United States is going from the south up past us, and it's bringing all that warm water up to us. But over on the other side of the country, the Pacific Ocean, it's making the same kind of big circle, but now you're on the other side of that circle, so it's bringing cold water down from the Arctic. And so they can't swim as far north in the Pacific Ocean as we can in the Atlantic Ocean in the United States. We have a great opportunity to look at currents and talk about the currents in the ocean and how they affect the land, because they actually change the weather of all the states along the coast, and what people do for a living can be changed dependent upon that weather. What kind of animals actually live in the waters there change dependent upon those currents and the cold water or the warm water that goes through your area.
And just to add to that, you know, Dr. Morey was a scientist, and centuries ago, he's the one who discovered these currents. And he discovered them because he read in the Bible about paths in the sea, and God really did put those paths in the sea. So it's so exciting. Another thing is talking about shells. Now, of course, every Florida child at one point in their life has a shell collection. And that shell collection can be fancy, fancy, fancy if they've ever gotten to go to places like Sanibel Island off the West Coast. Or it can be really simple, just a lot of plain, ordinary shells that have been eroded by the water and sand so that when you get them, they almost have a smooth texture. I can't think of how many times we've dragged buckets full of shells. I had a shell collection myself when I was little. And what's really fun is you can get these little shell guides, and you can, little field guides for shells, and you can look up the shells, and after you collect them at the beach, and you can find out what animal lived in them before they abandoned their home and left it. Another thing that's really neat at the beach is you can learn about earth science. Now, if you've ever found a piece of driftwood at the beach, or you picked up rocks or shells that have just been battered by the sand and the waves, because see, the waves contain sand in them, so it's not just the water, but the water contains sand, and they batter these things, you see what a good job they do of smoothing out the surface. And of course, that is earth science.
We got a really good lesson in earth science in 2004. That was one year where we did go to the beach in the cold weather, because we had 4 hurricanes come through Florida that year. 3 of them went right over our houses, Meredith and I, and they battered and ate away at our beaches. And so we went down to the beaches with the kids and stood at a safe distance from the brand new cliffs that were dug in our beaches. And we showed the kids, this is what happens when a lot of that water comes on and erodes away very quickly. And then it also opened up a really great discussion about what the flood did to the whole earth. So those of you who are looking for opportunities and ways to talk to your kids about the difference between what evolutionary scientists teach about the geologic record and what creation scientists teach about it, looking at the massive erosion that happens on our beaches after a big storm, any kind of big storm, it doesn't have to be 3 hurricanes, it can be just one really bad storm, but wait until it's safe to travel to that area and go to where the authorities tell you it's safe to go and look at it, and you will be amazed at how much just gets eaten away very quickly by one storm. Can you imagine how flooding the entire earth and then all of that water draining away, how that would have changed the landscape?
Wow. So, so true. Another thing about beach erosion is that you'll notice that beach homes are built completely different. And many of them are on stilts. There might be like a garage on the bottom or something like a game room, but the main living areas are usually on the second floor and the third floor because there is always, of course, the possibility and the probability of a hurricane and or even just really high tides one day that can come in if you have a home right on the beach. So one of the things, not just on the beach, but all throughout Florida, we have a problem with water. We have tons and tons of lakes. We have a very low elevation, and so the water is right below us. You don't have to dig very far to find water in Florida. And so architects have to do something when they're building a neighborhood with all that water. And so you see all these little ponds, which are really just drainage ditches, for all the water to run into so they can have solid ground to build these homes. But in doing that, even as simple as building a sandcastle in the sand, your children will have to figure out how to deal with the water as the waves rush in. And so here you have this huge civil engineering lesson by building a sandcastle. And your children, you'll see it. If they want to get really intense about building a sandcastle, they're going to have to make a plan. And many of them will do what? They'll dig little ditches around the castle to collect the water so that the water doesn't erode what they're building.
The southern east coast of the United States is lined with the Intercoastal Waterway. It's a really great device, we'll call it, where people can sail their boats from the Chesapeake Bay all the way down to, I think it's Key West,
I think is how they set it up.
And so they utilized rivers that already existed and inlets that already existed, and they built a lot of canals to match up with it too, so that these sailboats, they're smaller boats usually, they're not really made for going out to sea, but people want to take a nice long sail to Florida with their families, they'll go along this Intercoastal Waterway. Very scenic route, but because they have this, because it's stretching so far, there has to be a way for cars to get over to the beach side of these areas. And if you're in any of the states that have this, you know what I'm talking about. You've got bridges, more and more bridges. So you have these intercoastal waterway bridges, and they have to accommodate pretty tall ships. Sailing ships have these tall masts, and it may not be something out of a pirate story, but it could get that big. So we have a lot of really great drawbridges and these bridges that swivel to open up the path and very tall bridges so that they don't have to draw them up. People can just sail under them. And so if you're going to be making a trip across some of these waterways and crossing some of these bridges, if you can, it'd be interesting to route a different path going and then a different path coming home so that you can talk about different kinds of bridges. And if you live like in Virginia where I live, we had a lot of canals as part of this system. And so we could talk to our kids about canals and locks and how they utilize that. And you know, as you know, canals and waterways are also really good ways for shipping cargo. That was more the reason why it got begun, because
probably
shipping cargo to the south was important and they needed to find newer, cheaper ways to do it.
It's so funny, Lori. I'd never heard of locks, and I've boated in canals like almost all my life because I'm a Florida girl, but I just realized Florida's so flat. There's never change in elevation. So when I was teaching my kids about locks, I'm like, what are these things? I've never heard of them. And of course, in England or up in, you know, the Northeast United States, there's, you know, lots and lots of locks. So anyway, I'm just laughing at myself. But we are going to take a break. And we are going to tell you about some great things. Then we're going to be back and we are going to talk about lighthouses and forts. And you will find lots of lighthouses and lots of forts at the beach.
History shouldn't be boring. Meredith and Laura have some exciting new ebooks to bring the fun and excitement back into history. Studying the Middle Ages. Get Let's Have Our Own Medieval Banquet and Cook Up Some Fun. Studying Ancient History? How about making some recipes from the Ancient History Cookbook?
or get some creative ideas from Let's Have Our Own Olympic Games or Let's Have Our Own Archaeological Dig. These books are available at Amazon.com. The ebooks are available at PowerlineProd.com. Powerline Productions exists to serve you. We want to equip you to be joyful and successful in your homeschooling adventure. Powerline Productions. Being world changers, raising world changers.
You've been listening to Finish Well Radio on the Ultimate Radio Network. Now back to your host, Meredith Curtis.
Welcome back. We're so glad that you're back with us, and we are talking about how to spend 1,001 days at the beach. Now, I don't know if we spent 1,001 days, more or less, I don't know, but it does feel like it. And so we are convinced that it is a great place to learn. It's a great place to learn about all kinds of things, and we've talked about marine biology and oceanography and earth science and even architecture. And now we're going to move in and we're going to kind of do this transition with architecture and history. And one type of architecture that you'll find throughout the East Coast of the United States and the West Coast of the United States, and also the West Coast of Florida, which is a peninsula, the coast of Texas. But what you're going to find is forts and lighthouses. So where are you going to find those? Up in South Carolina, you've got Fort Sumter, the famous fort. But again, you have a lot of forts up and down the beach. Close to us is the big fort at St. Augustine. And the Spanish came, and that was their first settlement. And if you don't know, St. Augustine is the oldest continuously inhabited city in the United States. Pensacola actually was founded first, but then it kind of died out and then they rebuilt it later. But St. Augustine has been continually inhabited, and of course, immediately they have a fort. And where is the danger going to come? Most of the danger is going to come from the ocean, from other European countries. St. Augustine was settled by the Spanish, so you're going to have the danger of the English, you know, the Dutch, the French, anyone who wants to try to take over from the Spanish. And then, of course, you have the Native Americans who are probably thinking, what on earth are they doing here? So you want a nice, safe place. And the St. Augustine Fort is beautiful. We have visited it many, many times. Amazing, amazing place to visit.
Now, we all know we find forts in America in many places other than just the beach. And even when we think back to the first English settlements that came to America, sometimes they don't even refer to those settlements as having been forts, but they were. They had to build stockades around to protect themselves. So they really, the Jamestown settlement wasn't a fort. It was just a very much simpler one than the St. Augustine fort. Even in Roanoke Island in North Carolina, they probably should have had a better fort because I think that was the problem there. The poor people in that settlement got wiped out, and so that's why they're not considered the first settlement, because they didn't last long, I'm sorry to say. Having come from Virginia Beach and that area, there's a lot of history. The foundation of our country, you know, it kind of started in that area. And most people don't know that the settlers who went on upriver to Jamestown actually landed first on the coast in Virginia Beach, looked around, thought it was a beautiful place, but there's no way to really safely build a fort to have a settlement there and start their new colony. And so that's why they went up the river, where they could protect themselves better from upcoming attacks. Now, Virginia Beach, that area has the largest naval bases in the world because it's a great place to attack. So it's a necessary place to defend. So we have our modern versions of forts now, but those are all not on the beach. Fortunately, they keep all that away from the resort areas. And so you can enjoy the sun and the fun without examining the gray metal of all the ships they have there. But if you're in that part of the country, you can open up discussions about so much of our history and where it began by going to the beach and trying to imagine yourself if you were one of the first ones out there on the sea laying eyes on that beach, how would you react? How would you feel? And, you know, you can open up a discussion with their kids about that kind of history. It's really nice because pretty much every lighthouse that we've ever visited has a museum somehow attached to it. So look around for, we have the Ponce de Leon Lighthouse Museum, and we even have, they call it the Treasure Coast Museum, because there were so many Spanish treasure ships that shipwrecked off the coast of Florida that people hunted for treasure often off of those coasts. So wherever you're at, whatever beach you're going to, look around. There's probably a lighthouse. There's probably a museum. In Virginia Beach, they have the new and the old lighthouses at the exact same section of the beach, but it's so funny to call it the new one. It was built in like 1920. But they're all right there together. And sometimes, I don't know about other parts of the country, but sometimes they have heightened security at lighthouses because of terrorist activity that's gone on in our country. And so just be prepared if you're going to go visit a lighthouse, especially if it's still active in any way, that you may have to go through some extra steps with security. So find out about that before you plan your trip.
Lighthouses in themselves are just so interesting to study. There's a lighthouse near us, even closer than St. Augustine, and it's the Ponce Inlet Lighthouse. Of course, Ponce de Leon again. But this lighthouse is super tall with a circular staircase. And we did a staycation a few years ago, and my daughter Juliana said, "I want to climb the lighthouse." And I said, "Okay, I'll climb it with you." Wow, big mistake. I'm not a heights person anyway, but when you're doing a circular staircase and you look down, that's almost like a roller coaster, but not quite, you know, as far as the dizzy goes. But anyway, it was worth it. When we got to the top, the view was absolutely beautiful. As I finally made it all the way back down and kissed the ground, I thought to myself, those lighthouse keepers must have been pretty skinny because they had to climb all the way up, keep the light going, and then, you know, in the morning climb all the way down. So it was probably a lonely job. There were a lot of lighthouses with family living quarters up there, but really, really amazing. And there's always stories. Like, there's always exciting stories about that lighthouse and what happened. So for children to know that a lighthouse, of course, exists to let the ships know there's a shoreline here. And that can either be a good thing, like, hey, you're almost home, or it can be a bad thing, you're way off course. They're very purposeful. Of course, we as Christians are like lighthouses in that we have the light of Christ in us, and we're there shining brightly for anyone who is lost, who wants to come home to Jesus, can see us, and they can come and ask us about the Lord. So it's kind of a neat spiritual application as well.
If you're going to be going to the beach, don't just hop in the car and take off. You're trying to make it a homeschool day. So have your kids sit down with a map and map the route with you so they can see how to get there, where they're going to, or what they're going to pass, and even look at maps of the beaches themselves. Sometimes you can get a zoomed in map, a closer map of that particular area that you're going to. And it's interesting to see all of the inlets. They look like little fingers of ocean into the whole area. And talk to the kids about that. And with geography, you don't talk just about what state's next to what state, but you want to talk about what's causing the shoreline to look like this. And you can have a big discussion. You kind of bleed into earth science discussions as well. But you look at, okay, here we're going to this beach to have a vacation, but look how close we are to this harbor where they have a lot of ships. And, you know, up north they have a lot of areas where the beach for vacationing is very tiny because they have a very active fishing fleet and they need lots of land for docking ships for coming and going of fishermen and that kind of thing. And so you want to look at all that with your kids and let them see, and then look at the landforms. You've got the ocean, of course, but then you have the shore, and then you have rivers that come off the ocean. And some of you actually live in inland states that have lakes that are big enough that you have beaches there. You can do the same thing where you pull out maps and you can track the waterways that go from your big lake all the way out to the ocean, because you know, even the Great Lakes are attached to the Atlantic Ocean eventually. So you can study that with your kids and use your time at the beach to have a discussion of that. Sometimes we actually, instead of building sandcastles, we draw maps in the sand to kind of show what we're imagining or what we're seeing or what we studied before we came out there.
As we go on with talking about geography, you know, the beaches that Laura and I go to, especially when the kids were little, they had bathrooms, they had a little playground. There was a place that we could get something to eat if we didn't bring enough food or forgot our lunch or something like that. And those places, they basically come in and they bulldoze the beach and they have built hotels on it and stores and all that kind of stuff. And so definitely we mostly go to those beaches. But it's really nice sometimes to go to the quieter spots and be able to really see what the beach was like before the businesses came in and they built up the beach, you know, for our comfort, of course. But one of the things you'll see is sand dunes and you'll see seagrass. That's really fun. And I know kids love hiding, playing hide and seek in the seagrass and climbing and running around the sand dunes. It's really fun. It's just a really fun time. But make sure any place that you go, there's always some beach that it's just smaller, there's just less people there, and it's more in its natural state. We stayed in a place at the beach last summer, and they had this, like, you know, it was all built up and concrete and houses and stuff, and then there's this patch, this long patch of what it used to look like before, and then, of course, then there's the beach. So anyway, it's kind of cute, but there at least was that little bit of the kind of more natural state of what the beach was like. And that's fun for kids to see and good for learning about. Like when Columbus landed over in Hispaniola, he wasn't greeted by a neon sign saying vacancy and there's a hotel and all that kind of stuff. You know, it was sand dunes and seagrass and stuff like that. So that's a neat thing for kids to see.
Earlier when Meredith was talking about all of the different things that you can study when you're going to the beach and having a homeschool day at the beach, she mentioned human anatomy, health and safety. And I want to begin a discussion of that with something that we didn't mention earlier as part of earth science, but it actually is relative to both, and that is the composition of sand, what sand is made out of. I've been to a bunch of different beaches, and I found sand made out of a bunch of different things. One of the beaches I used to go to as a kid, we used to bring home bowls of sand and take them home and pull out our magnets because they were filled with iron. And so we could pull all the iron shavings out of the sand. They have Etch-a-Sketch and other games where they've actually used iron dust to draw with and whatnot. So we would play with the iron dust with our magnets and make pictures out of it and stuff like that. And so those sandy beaches are darker, but we've also been to beaches that are mostly crushed shells. And I have to tell you, they are not my favorite beaches because it actually hurts to walk on them. You have to wear flip-flops on those beaches. Some beaches are nothing but dirt, and some beaches are that pristine, white, really fine, almost dust-like sand that if it got hot enough, you can make beautiful glass out of.
Yes.
But you actually have to be aware of what kind of sand you have at your beach, because one of the fun things we like to do with our kids, they always want to bury each other.
Yes.
But you want to be careful about it. If you're in a place where there's things in the sand that could hurt your children, you don't want them burying each other in that, because you don't want them to come up all cut up and injured from it. So be aware of what kind of sand you have as part of your fun when you're going to the beach.
When you're talking about the beach, of course, you're talking about swimming in the ocean. And, of course, everyone loves to boogie board and ride the waves in. But it's really important to teach your children water safety and buddy swimming. You know, never go swimming alone. Always have a buddy. And we like to go to beaches where there are lifeguards, because we have actually used the lifeguards for our children. I remember one time, we have two girls that are the same age, and they were playing, and they were just carried by the current about a mile away from us, and we were all searching and looking for them. But also, I mentioned before, how to swim in a riptide, things like that. So that is important. And then there's first aid. We hope it never happens, but we've experienced bites We have had jellyfish stings, and we've had crab bites. And so, you know, you want to bring a little something with you. Now, the salt water is good for everything. So a lot of times we'll get a clean bucket and pour salt water over things. But that's something that kids learn just by doing, because something happens and you figure out how to treat it. And, of course, the lifeguard always has a first aid kit. And we have also used the lifeguards for saying kids too. So we make the most of our lifeguards when we're there. And finally, you can learn about human anatomy, about your skin and how much sun it takes to give nice little color and get that melatonin working, and how much sun it takes to give yourself a bad burn. And we have spent many times after the beach where someone missed a spot putting on the sunscreen, and so we're covering them with vinegar or aloe or something to relieve the pain. So again, we're learning about how our bodies work and how they respond to sun. And of course, when you talk about your body and you talk about the sun, there's good old vitamin D. So a trip to the beach is a dose of vitamin D.
A lot of times when we go to the beach, it's so hot and the kids are so preoccupied with playing and the fun, they don't want to sit down and eat a meal. And so we always bring sandwiches for our kids, and I don't think they've ever eaten them.
I don't know.
So I can't count how many times I've thrown away sandwiches from the beach. But plan ahead when you are going on a trip, and you know your kids, you know your family. Are they going to eat those peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, or, you know, is the ham and cheese going to disgust them, that the thought of it being warm, even though it's been in the cooler, they're so warm? If that's the case, just pack lots and lots of fruit and vegetables, you know, healthy snacks that they can just grab a couple of them. What's beautiful about fruits and vegetables, though, is they help with the hydration. You need to hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. Here's all this water. What's that quote from the book? Water, water everywhere and not a drop to drink. Well, that's the beach for you. There's tons of water everywhere, but you can get dehydrated really quick while you're out there. So stay away from the sodas. I know I hate saying that, but you should stay away from the sodas and stay away from the salty snacks too, and just stick to things that'll aid in that hydration, and bring lots and lots of water with you. And I mean, juices and sweet drinks are okay, but it was a camping trip, not a beach trip. But we took our kids on a camping trip in August, and my son just drank soda. He refused to drink the water, and he got so sick. We were really worried about him. Just keep an eye on that with your kids, because you don't want them to get sick, and then, of course, use it as an opportunity to teach them about nutrition.
So true, so true. Another subject that the beach lends itself to is art. And, of course, we talked about sandcastles. I don't know if you've ever seen videos or pictures of the most magnificent sandcastles in the world, but it's really fun to visit one of those shows, a sandcastle show where they compete for prizes and stuff. They are amazing. So sand can be a medium for art. Also, you've got photography, and it doesn't have to be a big fancy camera, but children can learn to take some really neat pictures. And I think that's where Shine developed a love for photography, was taking her little cheap camera to the beach, and she'd get pictures of birds, and she'd get pictures of little shells and the waves coming in and different things like that. And it really just kind of cultivated that love and taking pictures of people and getting good shots, because it's perfect for taking pictures because the sky's blue, it's such a pretty background, and then it's so bright, so you don't get those, like, indoor pictures sometimes can be all dark and yucky. And so that's really nice. And of course, after a trip to the beach, you can pull out glue and paper and stickies, and you can make beautiful scrapbook pages of your trips to the beach. And that's another art project.
Years ago, my family bought some disposable waterproof cameras. And that was back when they weren't as available as they are today. But we got a couple of these disposable cameras. And so my kids were really brave about taking the camera down to the water to take their pictures. And one of the most fun pictures they took that summer, I guess they were squatted down low
in the water, and they went to take a selfie of themselves together, and a wave was right behind them. So it looked like there was this giant wave crashing down on them. We don't have giant waves around here except during a storm. So clearly they had to have been sitting on the ground, but you couldn't tell that from the picture. So you can do a lot of fun things. And now there are more and more waterproof cell phones with good cameras coming out almost every day. And so if you're fortunate enough to have one of those, you can be a little more adventurous with your camera down at the beach, taking some really great pictures for your scrapbooking or your collection of photographs. And speaking of collections, Meredith touched on shell collecting earlier. With the pictures taking aspect of it, one nice way to really collect things from your trip is take pictures of all those birds that you've been observing. If you can, get a video clip or a photograph of that dolphin or of that manatee if you went over to that section of the beach. If you can get pictures of all these things, we've seen some crazy things washed up on the beach, and we could take a picture of it and then go home and research it. We went to the beach one time, and there were these weird-looking things that looked like bottle caps all over the beach, and turns out they were a form of jellyfish. And
I remember those?
They were crazy looking. We were able to research it because we took a picture first. And so keep that in mind. So your collection, instead of being artistic pictures, could be a collection of the animals that you've been observing.
Cool. Now, when you have little children, you have to pack diapers, you have to pack wipes, you have to pack baby toys, you have to pack baby sunscreen, you have to pack a pack and play and a big blanket to cover them or a little tent or something. And it does get easier to go to the beach as kids get a little older, but we always packed up all the stuff. We've had different vehicles to carry things down. Like I remember one time we had an all-terrain wagon and we'd pile everything in that, just in all kinds of things. And then, of course, as the kids got older, they could always help. But packing up for the beach is a lot about strategy and project management. And it's really fun to delegate that to one of your children who's a born leader. And I know I've done that a lot with my Juliana and say, hey, can you get everything ready for the beach? And she's actually better at it than me. I usually forget one or two things. She remembers everything. And so that's a little bit of character training, a little bit of, you know, leadership training, and that has been a really fun thing that we do because it's also a time when the family all has to work together. It's a long drive to the beach. It's about 45 minutes from our house to the beach because even though we're in Florida, we're actually in Central Florida, more in the middle and rather than over on the coast. So that is just kind of a neat way to do some character building and do some leadership training.
And, of course, another character training that we can do with our children is teaching them about serving, because once we make that 45-minute drive, unless you parked right on the beach, which is fun to do, but it's more expensive that way, and it carries with it its own problems. But if you've parked somewhere, you've got to get all of that stuff from your car to the ocean. And it usually involves a hill or crossing dunes or a very long boardwalk, or it just all depends on which part of the beach you go to and how it's set up where you're at. You may have to park in a neighborhood and walk past houses till you get to the public beach access and things like that. So that means everybody helps. Everybody serves the family. Even the littlest ones can carry maybe not the littlest ones, but a three-year-old can carry his own towel and he can carry his bucket with his little shovel in it. So things like that. So look for ways that you can divide up the carrying for everyone. And when you give your little guy a towel to carry for himself, or maybe even a towel and a bucket, you're teaching him how we all work together to put together this fun time, that nobody is a prima donna. Nobody is here to be the center of everybody's attention. And I promise you that is a lesson that is worth teaching your three-year-old.
And last but not least, the beach is a great place for physical activity and to get in shape. I know if you run along the beach in the sand, it's supposed to be like 10 times better than running along the dirt or running on concrete, sidewalk, or road. And so running, walking, we always go for walks along the beach. climbing. A lot of times the beaches we go to, there's rocks to climb, or like I said before, sand dunes. I mentioned the lighthouse climb. Boy, one climb a day like that, and that would get you into shape. We often bring frisbees, footballs, paddle balls, things like that to play on the sand. And of course, there's swimming, body surfing, actual surfing with the big surfboards, and skimboarding. So all of those things. You can also rent things, you know, like they have little pedal boats. I forgot what they're called, but they look like bikes, but they float, and so you pedal them. And so there's a lot that you can do for physical activity at the beach. And very seldom do we see our kids just sitting there on the blanket. They're usually up and around and going and moving. And even as they get older and they're mellowing out a little, they still like to go on long walks on the beach collecting. So it's a really great place for kids to exercise.
And one more promotion for going to a beach that has a lifeguard. If you have any people in your family that are prone to injury, then you definitely want to go have your fun at a beach with a lifeguard, because the lifeguards usually are equipped with whatever you need to get the help you need. We actually, one of my sons, we didn't know that his femur was on the verge of breaking when we went to the beach. So when he started running around playing football on the beach, it actually broke open. Without getting into any details, he had a bunch of micro fractures, so he couldn't walk anymore. He had a brother with him that could carry him back to where we were off seat, and we had enough people with us to help get him off the beach and into the car. But if it had been me and him alone, I wouldn't have been able to help him, and we would have needed that lifeguard. The lifeguards here, they have radios, and they call in a little golf cart, and they come and pick you up if you have something like that happen to you. And if it's a major event, they'll take you to the ambulance and get you to the hospital right away. So keep these kinds of things in mind. If you have people who are prone to health issues, you're probably going to not want to go off to that remote beach that only five people have heard of. You're going to want to stick to a more mainstream state park beach or something where they have safety people that can help you if you need it. So I know that's a bummer to think about those kinds of things, but you know, when we've got our kids out there, we do want to keep them safe, and we do want to have fun but not get injured in the process. And so I hope you've enjoyed hearing about 1001 homeschool days at the beach. We have no more kids in homeschooling anymore, but I think we're going to put in another 1001 homeschool days, or just days at the beach.
Yes, we will. Laura and I, we have graduated our kids, and we are still leading the homeschool co-op at our church. We write our own curriculum, and we'd love for you to check it out. It's at powerlineprod.com. That's powerlineprod, P-R-O-D.com. And we also have a website called JS Homeschooling. And if you go to that website, you will find lots and lots of freebies that you can download, like free reading lists, free classic books, free lesson plans. So we hope that you'll check us out. And that's JS Homeschooling. So again, thank you so much for joining us. We are so excited to have you as part of our radio family. God bless you, and have a wonderful summer.
Thank you for listening to Finish Well Radio with Meredith Curtis and the Finish Well team. Please listen in every first Monday of each month at 7 p.m. Eastern Time here at the Ultimate Radio Network.